Hi again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program for the month this afternoon. Here to take your calls is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York, a USDA Category 1 accredited veterinarian. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell University. She joined the Del Mar Animal Hospital staff in 1998. She and her husband share their home and lives with two dogs, six cats, two fish tanks, a pond with fish and frogs. It's like Dr. Doolittle already, but it's Dr. O'Loughlin. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio, or you could tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Take special care if you're tweeting especially. It's tough to get enough information in the 140 characters to enable a good answer. So provide as much info as you can squeeze in on your pet, including their age and their sex. If you're submitting a question online, email obviously is a bit more liberal. Love to hear from you on the phone, though. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Well, Dr. O'Loughlin, you had mentioned the dangers of Thanksgiving for pets, and I, for the life of me, don't know what you're talking about.
So the concern we have is, as we head into the holidays, there's a lot more rich foods out there that we're all eating, especially Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And dogs are particularly susceptible to getting an overly fatty meal. A lot of people don't think twice about the good old doggy bag and scraping the leftovers onto the
stuffing and everything else.
Exactly. Yeah. Gravy. Mm-hmm. Very bad. And what it can do is cause inflammation in the pancreas of these dogs. And the pancreas is the organ in your abdomen that makes all your digestive juices. And in for some reason in dogs, when they eat an overly fatty meal, it causes a nasty inflammation. And it can be as simple as an upset stomach to actually causing death.
Now, what percentage would you say cause, you know, how many dogs die from that?
Oh, gosh, a very small percentage.
Yeah.
I mean, the vast majority of dogs, you treat them. It can be as simple as, you know, outpatient treatment. Some dogs certainly do need to spend a couple of days in the hospital. I can only think of a couple of cases, you know, in my 15 years of practicing that have died.
Where the dog really ate.
Yes. You know, the one I can think of most, the first one I had die was a dog that licked the fat drippings from a barbecue grill after the people made ribs.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was not good.
And cats are okay, though.
Cats get pancreatitis. In fact, they get a lot more pancreatitis than we ever used to think, but they don't seem to get it from what we call garbageitis like the dogs do.
Mm, okay, and they're just smarter eaters?
Generally, yes.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Mark in Salem, New York, you're first.
Hi. I feel like Dr. Doolittle up here, too. I live up in Washington County in the rural area, and I have three cats, and my mother has three cats, and I've got a chicken who lives on the back porch instead of in the coop. She lays an egg every day for me. Unfortunately, I can't eat eggs because of cholesterol.
No, boy.
And we had a horse and sheep. Now, the situation is that we had two different pastures, and the four sheep that are in the one pasture have been together for quite a while. And then we had the other sheep with our horse for company, and the horse passed away a couple months ago. And we brought the sheep up to this flock. And I know it's a matriarchal society, and, you know, the baby sheep follow their mothers and stuff like that, but we can't seem to get her to, or them to accept her, or vice versa. They'll go in the barn at night, and she doesn't want to go in, or she separates herself from the rest. And it's been, I thought after a period of time that they would just, you know, gradually, you know, come together. But I can't figure out what she's looking for. I mean, she acts like, well, sheep are like pushing strings anyway. do you have any ideas about what I could do to make, we feed them all in the same spot, She'll come and get her food, and then she goes off by herself. And sometimes it's on the other side of the pasture.
Huh.
She won't hang with the others, so to speak. And the rest are, you know, have been a couple at a time, and then we got a couple more. And so they weren't brought in all at the same time together as a group. They acclimated. So I can't. This one animal doesn't seem to want to socialize, and I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to kind of encourage her that way.
I have to admit, you have got me in a, I don't know anything about sheep.
First call has, you've stumped the band on the first call. Well done.
Sheep are difficult because, as I said, it's like pushing string.
Yes. I guess what I would recommend is you might want to consider the Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Okay.
They have, you know, farm animal expertise that I do not.
The other possibility I was thinking of is going down. Now I've got a lot of apples, and I can bring like apples down and make sure that everybody's there and each gets an apple together, so that they kind of reinforce that eating together.
It's a good idea.
Except the only problem is they weigh 200 pounds, and when they come at you for their apple, if they hit you, I've ended up on my dupa more times than I can count.
Mark, I got to say, this is one of the more interesting calls we've ever had on a Pets and Vets show. Thank you very much for starting us off.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one. All right. Well, we've got the sheep covered now. Let's go to Bill in Rensselaerville. Bill.
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon.
Hi there.
My question is, what triggers hibernation in animals, and specifically animals that would burrow in the mud or underwater, how do they survive without air? I'm going to be forced to hang up here and listen to your answer.
Okay.
Hopefully maybe you can shed some light on that.
Before you do hang up, Bill, I'm assuming you're talking, when you talk about burrowing in the mud, you're talking about things like frogs and the like.
Turtles, frogs.
Yes.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. All right, Bill. Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate it. All right.
So, again, I'm not an expert on reptiles and amphibians, but my understanding is, you know, they're cold-blooded critters. So once they get down into the cold, their metabolism just
goes right down
to almost nothing. And so they don't need a whole lot. I have, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning, a little pond outside my back door, and I do have some frogs that, you know, you build it and they will come, and we have frogs that showed up, and I just put my pond to sleep for the winter, and the frogs in the summer are these happy little green frogs sitting on the side of the pond, and when I went to put the pond to sleep and took out the filter, there were three frogs sitting on the filter that were dark brown and barely moving and basically
but still alive.
Still alive. And
wow.
I nudged them back into the pond and they went and found rocks to go hide under, and they'll be there in the spring when I clean the pond out. So.
Amazing. Well, this is quite a show. Let's go to Dorothy in Kingston. Dorothy, you're on.
Hi. I have a 12-year-old wired-haired dachshund who's having a problem with fluid buildup in his body. He looks almost like he's ready to have puppies. I've taken him to the vet, and the vet drained him, but he didn't sound too encouraging. He said it's going to continue, and I was wondering if you could shed any light on that and if it's a common thing or whether he's near the pink needle or just having a problem.
So, Dorothy, did the veterinarian do any blood tests?
No.
Okay. Did he mention anything? I'm sorry, is your dog a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
Did they mention anything about his heart?
They said they were suspicious about having him having a bad heart or cancer.
Right.
And either one, you know, will be fatal. But I was just wondering if doesn't seem to be too uncomfortable. But it just is so sad to see him fill up.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, fluid in the abdomen, the technical term is ascites, can be caused by a number of things, including heart failure and liver problems, low protein.
Are they all very bad
cancer.
Things?
Most of them are not good.
Okay.
But, you know, depending if you can do blood tests and find out if there's something going on with the liver, there are potentially medications you can give to help the liver work better. And there are certainly diet changes you could do to try and help with their protein levels if that's the problem. If it's heart disease, sometimes there's medications you can give to help the heart work better. And, you know, worst case scenario, you drain the fluid as needed. I have had some dogs with heart disease that get fluid buildup in their abdomen that can go months with occasionally getting their belly tapped. You know, if it's a cancer, unfortunately, that's not good, and probably he doesn't have long. But, you know, if you can afford the testing, I would get some tests done and see what you're looking at.
Oh, okay, fine. I just when I took him this last time, I was just prepared. I thought, well, this is it. And then, you know, they drained him, and they just didn't seem to give me too much encouragement. They said it's serious. And
right.
I was just wondering if how long, you know, he had, or if it happened imminently, or...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know.
Without more information, it's hard to say. But, you know, in general, fluid in the belly is not a very good thing.
Dorothy, thanks a lot, and we appreciate your call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here, and your calls. More of them coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Unison Arts Center, New Paltz, presenting Casino Night at Mohawk Mountain House. Music, food, drink, and games for the Friends of Unison Arts, Saturday, November 16th at 8, unisonarts.org. Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist, eye examination, classic eyewear, contact lens fitting in historic Uptown Kingston, participating with MVP, Empire, Davis, VSP, Medicare, and other insurances, CohenOptometry.com. Little Wolf Architecture, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing collaborative discovery and design for dwellings in the regional landscape, featuring passive house and natural home strategies, littlewolfarch.com. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning, waldorfsaratoga.org.
One 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It is Vox Pop. It is Pets and Vets. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin with us. O'Loughlin is with us today, and let's go to Jennifer in Poughkeepsie. Jennifer.
Hi. I have two cats. They're about 10 years old, and they weren't litter mates, but I got them both when they were very young. They've developed a relationship where one of them, they're both females, but one of them is definitely sort of the alpha, and the other one's, you know, sort of the omega of the two of them. Anyway, what's been happening lately, we moved about a year and a half ago into a new house, and it's two stories. The litter box is upstairs in the bathroom, and for a while they had no problem with it. But about maybe 6 months ago, one of them, the one who's sort of the omega personality, started pooping in the corners of our dining room, which is downstairs. And so I was wondering if you thought that sounded like a physical thing or more of a behavioral thing. And if you have any ideas about what to do about it. It's not every time, but every so often.
Well, one concern, and, you know, 10 years old is not, you know, terribly old, but they've done studies where they did find that a large percentage of cats 10 years and older do have arthritis. So one consideration is, does the cat... who's going downstairs have some arthritis issues and just finds it easier to stay on the one level rather than going up to use the litter box. The easiest thing to do in that case is do a test where you stick a litter box down on the lower floor and see if the cat will use that. I had that happen with one of my older cats, the opposite. He liked to hang out upstairs and didn't want to go downstairs to use the litter box. Other things can be, if it's stool that they're leaving, it can sometimes be a constipation issue. Is the stool that you're finding in the dining room normal looking?
It is normal. I mean, it's not soft.
Okay.
You know, it's harder, but normal.
Okay. Because sometimes if they're having some mild constipation issues, they may go to the litter box and try and go. And they can't get it out, and then they're downstairs, and whoops, all of a sudden it's, you know, they're ready to go, and it just comes out. It could be a territorial thing between the two cats. So certainly when any time you're having a litter box issue, the recommendation is to have one litter box per cat plus one.
Uh-huh.
So that would actually mean putting out two more litter boxes in your house.
Okay.
And then the third possibility is there could be something about the litter that he doesn't like. Offering a couple of litter boxes with different litter and seeing if he chooses one of those.
Okay.
And then, of course, to be careful to clean the area that he has used in the dining room very carefully with, they make enzymatic cleaners that will remove the odor so he doesn't keep going back to that spot.
Okay.
Okay. What do you know any names of those enzymatic cleaners?
Oh, there's Nature's Miracle. There's one I've gotten that you have to buy online around here called Fission, F-I-Z-Z-I-O-N, things like that. It usually says enzymatic cleaner,
okay.
And most of those you can buy in pet stores.
All right.
Okay.
Jennifer,
and
thanks.
If it is, I'm sorry. I was just going to ask if it is arthritis, is there any way to find that out and do anything about it?
Well, certainly. I mean, you can do X-rays, but there are also you can just try the cat on, medications like a glucosamine, and if that doesn't work alone, then potentially trying something stronger like a non-steroidal. But I would speak to your veterinarian about that.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. So Motrin or an anti-inflammatory?
No, you don't. Yeah, you want to be very careful with cats. Cats are very sensitive to non-steroidals, so that's why I would have a conversation with your vet.
All right. Let's go to Sarah in Greenfield. Sarah, you're on with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've got a rabbit. I think he's about 2 years old, and I've had him to the vet because he had rusty-looking urine, and they said he had no crystals. They gave him antibiotics and probiotics, and this was maybe like a month and a half ago, and he's still got the rusty-looking urine. And I was just wondering if you had any advice for that.
I'd have to say, unfortunately, no. I'm not a small rodent rabbit person. So I would – is the veterinarian that you see comfortable dealing with rabbits?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess I would check back with your vet then.
I wish
I had more options for you, but...
That's okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
So if that presented itself in a cat, what would you say?
Oh, gosh. You know, rusty-colored urine makes me think blood, but again, rabbit urine is completely different.
So really, the physiological processes are that different?
Yes. Yes.
So
you know.
That's why you're so guarded there. Yeah, see, no sheep, no rabbits. What else? Will in Albany. Will.
Good afternoon. I have two felines. They're sisters. I've had them for 5 years. One's a short hair. One is a long hair. The shorter hair is rather compulsive about grooming her longer hair sister. The short hair goes into convulsions when she's vomiting what seems to be a fur ball. I'm concerned. One thing I did do is I switched from the indoor fur ball formula by Iams to back to the original Iams, and it's been less of a problem. My main concern is that when she's going into these convulsions, it just seems like she's like going to pass out or something.
Oh, boy.
Now, when you say she's having a convulsion, I mean, is it just a very forceful vomit?
Very forceful.
Okay.
From tail to nose, and it's just a wave.
And does she bring up hair every time that she does that?
It's usually the food that's been recently ate.
Okay.
And it very seldom has very much fur.
Okay.
I don't see a formed fur ball very often.
Okay. Then I would be a little more concerned that there's something else going on with your cat that's making her vomit quite that much and that forcefully. Has she been to the vet? Have you had her looked at?
I've had her. The last time she was at the vet, it was for a very odd flea. They were down on her back, and they were like little dirt things.
Right.
And she did a checkup. That wasn't an issue I brought up at that time, and I haven't had her back since.
Yeah.
But I am on a I'm disabled on a fixed income, and $100 is a lot of food.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
You know, because the concerns are, you know, with vomiting like that is she could have an issue with her food.
Mm-hmm.
She could be sensitive to ingredients in her food. You know, I've seen cats who literally have a stomach full of hair. So they're not vomiting up the hair, but the stomach itself is just one big hairball.
Mm-hmm. How do you get rid of that?
And the couple I've seen, it's surgery.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But, I mean, I suppose if money is a real issue, one thing you could try is one of the over-the-counter limited ingredient diets. They are basically only sold through pet stores and not in the grocery store.
Okay. Limited ingredients.
Yep. And if you go to most of these pet stores, they will be able to, you know, help you out to pick out a limited ingredient diet. They're made of things like duck and rabbit.
Okay.
So if the cat is basically allergic to something in her food, they don't react to the new ingredient. So it'd be something to try.
Yeah.
Both of these guys do not like the pate, canned cat food.
Right.
They do dry and one can a day. The shredded, the frisky shredded stuff they prefer, and it's something that can sit in the bowl, and they don't eat it all at once.
Right, right.
So they have a preference. Over a meatier than a ground up.
Right.
All right.
But limited ingredients.
Limited ingredient.
Petco
yep.
would have this.
They should be able to help you out. Yep.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Well, thank you. And the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest today. It's Pets and Vets Vox Pop. Elizabeth in Northampton, you're on.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Excellent. I have a 12-year-old lab mutt named Charles, and through process of elimination, the vet has come to decide that he has degenerative myelopathy.
Mm-hmm.
His back end is sort of off. So I've gotten him a cart. He wears Pampers at night. He's a very happy boy. But what I wanted to ask you is, there's anything else I could do diet-wise or medication-wise that would help him?
So, for those who don't know, degenerative myelopathy is basically death of nerve cells in the spinal cord that leads to a progressive weakness in the hind end, eventually urinary and fecal incontinence, and eventually they can't walk. So, unfortunately, he's gotten to the point where he can't walk anymore, or just you're assisting him with the cart?
He can walk. He looks like he's drunk, basically. But we go for nice long walks with the cart. He loves the cart. He's incontinent at night.
Okay.
So we have these great doggy Pampers that we put on him. And he wears boots because he drags his back feet.
Right. Right.
But he's not in pain or anything. He's just kind of not able to do
exactly
things without some help.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know. The latest I've read about with these, one thing they do recommend is exercise. So if you can walk him where you're maybe able to assist his hind end, you know, with a...
Right, that's what the cart does. And we go at least a mile, mile and a half every day with that. So he loves that.
And he's using his hind legs with the cart?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes he doesn't, and then I have to put them up because he just will drag them.
Right, right.
But the front end is fine.
Right.
It's the rear end that doesn't work.
Right. But I was thinking, you know, if you can get one of those, even for a short walk, one of the
the halter kind of thing?
Yes, exactly, where you're assisting part of his weight, just because getting him to use those muscles and will sort of help stimulate what nerve cells he has left.
Okay.
And sort of keep those messages coming to the feet. Diet-wise, I don't know of any great things. Some people believe in acupuncture for these dogs. That would be certainly something to look into, and there are more and more people in the area that are offering acupuncture. I can't promise you anything. I personally had a dog with it, and I tried it, but I think I waited a little too long, and I didn't get a lot of help, but it'd be worth a try.
Yeah, that's one of the frustrating things about it is there's no, like, book that you can go get that says these are the five things to get. I wouldn't believe how many boots I went through before I finally found a pair that would stay on him and actually work.
Yeah, and
the ones that are at the pet store are worthless.
Yep, you know, and unfortunately with degenerative myelopathy, if that's truly what it is, I mean, when the cells have died in the spinal cord, they've died.
Nothing
so
they've died.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
Right.
So I know he's not going to get better, but. Do you have a sense of longevity?
Oh, gosh. You know, I've seen various. I've seen dogs go months and months and months. So it depends on the dog.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. All right. Good luck.
Thanks, Elizabeth. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. So are you a proponent, then, of acupuncture?
Oh, yes. I've seen acupuncture do. I just actually had a patient in that was having neck pain this spring. And we were having trouble controlling it with medication, and she ended up taking the dog to an acupuncturist, and it worked great.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
So it can do wonders.
Let's go to Philip in Kingston. Philip, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
For years, I heard that raw meat was better for dogs because it was more what's the word I'm looking for? Evolutionarily suited. And I'm a hunter, and I started keeping the organs that I wouldn't eat, as well as the shot-up meat that I wouldn't eat, and the other byproducts. And I've started, you know, grinding it and packaging it and giving it to friends as dog food. The dogs seem to love it. But after your comments about rich food being deleterious for dogs at the holidays, I was starting to wonder about the fat content because I throw the fat into my dog food mix. And I was wondering if maybe you were going to suggest, well, you know, keep that aside and add in by weight 10% or 15% or whatever it is. I just don't know. So my question is, first of all, is it true that raw meat is better for dogs? And two, should I be concerned with the fat content? Obviously, venison is very lean, but the dog food that I make is richer in fat because a lot of the fat that I trim goes into the dog food.
Okay.
Yeah, my concern would be, as you mentioned, the proportion. You know, yes, some people are huge proponents of raw food diet, and I think raw food diet can have its place, but it needs to be made very carefully and in the right proportion with all of the proper nutrients. So I'd be a little worried about your sort of homemade venison diet. I think, you know, potentially giving some of the just venison meat as a treat would be okay. I'd be a little careful about considering that to be a whole diet.
It can't be a whole diet because I don't shoot that many deer.
Right.
So these people put it in their freezer and, you know, in half-pound packets. The dog gets it once a week or once every 2 weeks. The dog seems to adore it.
Yep. I guess I would, if you were going to do that and do it as a treat, I would probably leave most, if not all, of the fat out of it. They don't really need the fat, and they're going to be happy just with a little bit of meat.
All right.
That's interesting. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Philip. And over we go to Albert in Pittsfield. Albert, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have an American Eskimo that I adopted at 3 years old. And I don't know what kind of food they had been feeding her when I adopted her, but her rear teeth were full of tartar. So I had her teeth cleaned by the vet a couple of times, and the vet was unsure why her teeth were so bad. She said that perhaps, you know, sometimes these dogs, it's in their saliva, and that it's, for some small dogs, it's a normal thing. I feed her the blue buffalo lamb, the hard lamb treats. I mix that with the there's like a meat roll that you buy in the refrigerated section of the pet store. So I give her a little sliver of the meat, and I give her a little bit of the hard food mixed together. She eats that once a day. Her weight is perfect, and she's about 8 years old now, but I'm still concerned about those rear teeth.
Okay.
I try to brush them, but they just look terrible.
Right. Unfortunately, most dental disease is primarily genetics. Some dogs just are prone to building tartar. It can be partly diet, but to be honest, you know, most diets do very little for teeth. People always talk about, oh, well, I feed them dry food. Well, unless you're feeding a dental diets are made so the pieces of food don't just break up when the dog chews it. They actually act as a scrubbing type of mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one consideration. You might want to look into getting dental diet. They do make prescription dental diets. They also do have some over-the-counter dental diets now.
Okay.
They also make things like greenies and things like that.
Yeah, but she loves the greenies. I give her biscuits, you know. And I also use that green gel that they say cleans, but it doesn't really do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But her breath is horrible.
Yeah.
That's the one
thing.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, some of these dogs need an every other year or every year dental cleaning. Mm. I just did my own dog's teeth. He's 5 years old, and this is the third time I've cleaned his teeth. So.
Albert, was your dog a smoker?
No, not a smoker.
All right. Hey, we're going to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Zach, let's hit it. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin is here. More calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Kingsway Community Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including memory care and more, caring in the family tradition, 518-393-8800. Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia, featuring a new kitchen and bath design center, offering Starmark cabinetry, Cambria, and more. True Value, start right, start here. Mario'sTrueValue.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and gardening equipment, parts and service to customers throughout western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. And Albany Vegan Network, presenting their 7th annual Albany Veg Fest with cooking demos, food, vendors, speakers, and more, open to the public Saturday, November 16th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Polish Community Center, Albany, albanyvegfest.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number, and Dr. Kerry O'Loughlin is our guest on this Pets and Vets edition. Let's go all the way down to beautiful Mount Kisco, New York. Jerry in Mount Kisco, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling about a Toy Fox Terrier, 7 pounds, and the situation when she had her last rabies shot, which was about 2.5 years ago, you know, the 3-year program. And after it, her little face got a little swollen, and I've had that happen before, and a little bit of Benadryl, and it goes down, and she's fine within a day. The last time she had her rabies shot, oh, it's hard for me to talk about. She threw up, well, we tried the Benadryl routine, then she started throwing up like crazy, and then she developed on her abdomen and chest, these big red rings, three or four of these big red rings that, about the size of a jelly jar top. And we couldn't keep food down at all. I was taking her down to the vet every day to get some sub-Q hydration. And we tried prescription food. This went on for 3 weeks. It was awful. We thought for sure we were going to lose her. Now, gradually, on the IVD venison potato food, gradually she was able to keep that down. And that's what I fed her for at least a year, slowly trying to introduce some other things, and finally got her to the point where she can eat regular dog food now. I feed her science diet usually. But what's coming up now is in about 4 months, she's got to have another rabies shot, and I'm a wreck about it.
Okay. Right, right. So did your vet agree that this skin reaction was...
He couldn't figure it out. He was calling every other vet he knew. In fact, he took pictures and sent them to Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could figure out what the heck these big red rings were. And
right.
if it was, in fact, an allergic reaction, although we're assuming it was, we don't know if it was to the rabies shot or the Benadryl.
Right.
Now, he has since retired. I'm with a new vet. The new vet is suggesting giving her some cortisone or something ahead of time.
Right.
I don't. It's got me scared to death.
Right. And how old is your dog?
She is now 7.
Okay. You know, the concern with rabies is, boy, you know, we do still have rabies in this area. And, you know, boy, if your dog gets rabies, you're kind of out of luck.
That's it.
I would be willing not to do it.
Right.
But then, of course, I can't get her license renewed.
Right.
You know,
there is, your veterinarian does have the option. There is an exemption form that we can fill out that has to be done yearly if you feel that there is a medical reason why the dog cannot be vaccinated. And I have done this for several patients. And it allows them to, you know, be licensed or at least not be an illegal dog.
Mm-hmm.
However, if the dog were to be exposed to a rabid animal or, you know, were to bite someone, they are considered a non-vaccinated dog.
You know, I really have no concern of that.
Right. And would have to be quarantined.
Yeah,
but
I'm not worried about her ever getting rabies or ever biting
right.
anybody. She doesn't get into contact with other animals and really very few people
yep.
too.
Yep. So you may want to have the discussion with your vet about potentially considering her an exemption dog.
Do you think these rings were in fact a reaction
boy,
to the rabies shot?
You know, it's hard to say. It certainly sounds like her reaction got worse, you know, after this last rabies compared to the one before that. And
yeah.
that is a concern. If you have a dog that has a increasingly strong reaction, I have had a couple of dogs who go from just a swollen face to, you know, collapsing, you know, and
mm-hmm.
those dogs I'm not going to vaccinate anymore. So
okay.
you have to do it case by case. So I would have a discussion
okay.
with your vet.
Jerry,
that's
thanks
great.
A lot. And we appreciate the call from Mount Kisco. It's a great town.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Irene in Latham. Irene.
Yes. Hi. I have 2 foster kittens right now from the shelter. I take them, you know, when they're like 5 or 6 weeks and then beef them up and then bring them back and they have their surgery
mm-hmm.
and they get adopted. So I've done it before. So now it's siblings, a boy and a girl. And they were picked up somewhere, I guess, in Albany on the street, and there were 4 of them. And 2 died. So anyway, but these are doing fine. But I noticed that, so the boy is really much more outgoing and much more adjusted. And he's bigger and the girl is like more wiry. And so I have 2 questions. I'm just curious. I noticed that they're very playful. Oops, now they opened the toaster.
Okay.
So they play a lot, but when they settle down, like on the couch, he goes kind of dozes off very calmly. She becomes, I would say, obsessively a licker.
Mm-hmm.
She licks herself. She licks her brother, like indiscriminately, like the whole surface. Then if she tries to get my hand, she grabs it and tries to lick my hand.
Yep.
And then she licks the blanket. You know, she's like can't settle down. Is that something? I've never seen it before. Is that something that I should let the shelter know there's some kind of, or
I think it's most likely because of their orphan status. We'd certainly see this in young kittens who were taken away from their mom too soon.
Mm.
Some of them are nursers where they'll nurse on everything. And I've also had them where they just lick everything. And most of them will outgrow it. And, you know, with lots of TLC and attention, they will outgrow it.
It's not anything. Well, you know, she has come. He really settled down. He has become less you know, he's not frightened. He has stopped the hiding, like, within a few days. She
yep.
was more skittish.
Yeah.
It's taken her, like, weeks for even come to me and settle down. And she's coming. She's just slow. But when I see her just obsessively licking, I just feel so sorry for her. But it's not something to, like she has a disorder.
No, I don't. I would highly doubt that it's anything medical. I think it's more psychological.
Okay, and it should go away.
Can I just quick question?
Sure.
So I'm bringing them back. Unfortunately, I can't adopt because my adult son, when he was, he's allergic. So that's my compromise to foster. I'm bringing them back to, you know, next week. And the shelter, I think, has the policy that even if somebody wants to adopt two kittens, they try not to do two siblings because they say one is like alpha and this and that. And I just kind of breaks my heart because I see they really kiss, they embrace. They just absolutely, if one goes to another room and kind of gets locked out, the other one starts meowing and they really are just like so.
Very bonded. Yeah.
Very, very, very bonded. So what would separation do? How do cats adjust to this kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I think they're young. I personally like kittens in pairs. I think they
even siblings, right?
Yeah, even siblings. I think they just keep each other company. So as long as they're young enough, if they have other kittens that they can, you know, put them in with, I think they'd be fine.
Okay.
What if they take them, you know, well, they probably will just give them to anybody, and most likely one, each of them will be just the only
adopted
cat.
Singly. Yep. Well, I'm afraid that's a little out of all of our hands. It's up to the shelter. But
right. But what is, like, from your experience, does it do any, like, long-term psychological?
No, I'm sure as long as they're going to a home where they're going to get lots of love and attention from their owners, they'll be fine.
Irene, thank you very much. Let's go to Layla in Mount Tremper. Layla.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
I just wanted to comment. I have a white German Shepherd who slowly lost the use of her back leg, starting with the left back leg. I took her to a homeopathic vet, and we treated her homeopathically, and we reversed the situation, and she's almost back to normal, coming on 14 and still jumping in the back of the car normally and so forth. So I just wanted to mention that.
Are you sure it was
but
the same illness? The same nerve degenerative?
No, I don't know. I don't know if it is or not, but there are a lot of things that can be treated homeopathically. It's just sort of my comment.
Okay.
Yep, and
I also, I also wanted to ask, my understanding is that immunity to rabies can extend after the vaccination technically expires, and that could be discovered with a rabies titer, and I wondered if that was accurate. If you could comment on that, please.
You certainly can have rabies titers done. The state does not recognize a rabies titer in lieu of vaccination. So
New York State?
New York State does not.
How about if you have one of the medical exemptions? Is that?
I think if for your peace of mind, if you have an animal that can't be vaccinated and we're going to do the medical exemption, if you wanted to get the titer done, just so you know, there is nothing that I don't believe there's actual proof of what the protective level is of the rabies. I mean, they do have titer levels that they say above this, they're considered protected, but, I don't know of the studies that show what is the protective level.
Got it. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Layla, thank you. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin on this Pets and Vets edition. Kim in Gilderland. Kim.
Hi. I have a 9-year-old Shepherd Lab mix that I've had since she was about 2. And she has some kind of GI upset that she's had ever since I got her. Doesn't seem to matter what brand food I feed her. She will periodically just pant and pant and pant and beg for food excessively. It reminds me of somebody like having gastritis or something because she just like, I need food, I need food, I need food. The vets laugh at me and act like, oh, she's just part lab and labs just always want food. But it is definitely periodic. It's not consistent. She's been tested for her thyroid, which is on the low side of normal, but normal, and we had her on thyroid med, and it didn't make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I will, when it gets really bad, I'll give her Pepcid, but just for a couple of days because I really don't want to keep her on medicine.
Right. Does the Pepsid...
I just wondered if you had any ideas. Sometimes her breath does smell of poop.
Yeah.
You know, I do know she, like, grazes on, you know, something in the lawn out there, like rabbit turds or something.
Yeah. But... All right.
Does the Pepsid seem to help?
Yes.
Okay. Because certainly, I mean, we do see some dogs who have almost like acid reflux.
Okay.
And off some of these dogs will do vomiting of bile, especially early in the morning when their stomachs are empty.
Yeah, she never vomits.
You know, some dogs will just, you know, act anxious and pant.
That's what she does. And she can be laying down and doing it.
Yep. I mean, my feeling is if the Pepsid helps, mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with using occasional Pepsid.
Okay.
I usually, if my clients are going to do it, I'd like to do it for at least a week or 10 days because, you know, the stomach is a pretty nasty place, if you think about it. It's full of acid.
Yeah.
There is normally a mucus layer that protects the stomach lining. And in these dogs that get the basically gastritis, something allows that mucus to break down and the acid starts to eat away at the stomach.
Right.
And before it gets to ulcer stage, you know, if you can decrease the acid in the stomach for a period of time and let that stomach heal, they'll often go on their merry way.
Okay.
So I like to give them a week or 10 days of antacids and then see how they do.
Okay, because I was told that dogs don't get gastritis.
Oh, yeah, no, they do.
They do.
There are a lot of different things that can cause it. But, yeah, they can get gastritis for sure.
Is there any concern with lowering the acid level? I always felt like the acid's there to kill bacteria and stuff, and, you know, I don't know what she's eating outside.
Yep. No.
When I catch her eating off the lawn, I yell at her, but you know, it doesn't stop.
I can't say I've ever seen a dog get sick from taking antacids.
Okay.
Thanks, Kim. We appreciate it very much. Over to Catherine in Saratoga Springs. Catherine, you're on.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a Great Pyrenees mix, and she's about 10 years old, and she had some routine blood work done, and she had two liver enzymes that were really, really high,
mm-hmm.
and the vet said that it might be cancer, it could be gallbladder, it could be, but he said try medication first. So I've had her on Dameron, I think.
Denamarin,
yes, yep. And one of the enzymes is back to normal. But the other one is still, it's coming down slowly, but not like the other one.
Okay.
Should I just keep her? He says just keep her on the medication and we'll just keep checking her.
Right. That's very possible because I'm assuming the two enzymes you're talking about, there's ALT and there's alkaline phosphatase. Those are the two of the major liver enzymes that are checked.
Okay.
ALT will come down much quicker than the alkaline phosphatase, because alkaline phosphatase just has a longer half-life.
Oh, I see.
So if you're seeing improvement, I would keep going with the Denamarin.
Okay, and not go for the ultrasound or anything?
Well, I mean, you can see, I don't know timing-wise how long we're talking. Has it been weeks, months?
She's been on it about almost 3 months now.
Oh, okay. You know, if they're coming down nicely back to, you know, normal levels, then I would be less concerned.
Okay, with the one still being just, it just comes down maybe like 5 points or five, I don't know what it is, five
right.
whatevers. But, you know, and this last time it came down five more. You know,
right.
we do the blood work periodically.
Yep.
So,
yeah, unfortunately, there are a lot of things that can make liver enzymes go up, some of them having to do with the liver and some not having to do with the liver. Cushing's disease and, you know, thyroid disease, other things outside, even intestinal issues can make liver enzymes. The liver is basically the sort of, it filters all the toxins in the body. So anything that's coming through is going to affect the liver. But if she's on the mend and she's otherwise feeling fine, I think you've got
fine.
The liver.
Yeah.
The liver is a very forgiving organ, so it can heal. you know, I would keep discussing with your vet, but it sounds like she's on the mend.
Catherine, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right, and thank you, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. I want to say Laughlin. The website for your hospital
is DelmarAnimalHospital.com.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll see you again. Support comes from Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady. Cosmetic dentistry, including porcelain laminates, crowns, implants, and Invisalign orthodontics. PadulaDDS.com, Healthy Living Market and Cafe, offering Thanksgiving pies, locally farm-raised turkeys, and more. Pre-orders available, HealthyLivingMarket.com. And Beacon Institute for Rivers and Estuaries of Clarkson University, offering a hybrid online and in-person Clarkson Master of Science in Engineering Management for Working Professionals, BIRE.org/MSEM for upcoming hybrid programs in the region. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who handled the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered the phones. Tom Jobe, the web wizard today. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, automotive repair with Gordon Fricke. Stay tuned now for a news update.